What's trending?
All right, let's check in on the hot topics trending.
And number one here on Cody and Gold is the news involving the Royals and their starting pitcher, Danny Duffy. As you heard from sort of there, Mike Matheny announcing that Duffy will not start tonight. No replacement has been named yet. Have to assume maybe Jacob Junis gets the call tonight for the Royals in Detroit. Royals in the middle of a six-game winning streak, but Danny Duffy missed the team charter last night, is in Detroit, was able to get a commercial flight later in the evening. We don't know that to be a fact, but one would assume that that's what happened there.
They do rent them, you know.
Rob charter. Collins, Fox 4 Sports KC, reporting that Danny Duffy, sources telling him that Duffy was found with a damaged vehicle in KC last night waiting on a ride. No citations were given, and then Duffy did catch the later flight, and as we mentioned, currently with the team. So that's what Fox 4 and Rob Collins reporting, found with a damaged vehicle in KC. No citations were given, but don't like hearing that.
See, wait till the Royals put out something, which they will. They're really very transparent about things. I mean, it could have been nothing at
all.
Let's
hope so.
To be honest with you, the Royals could almost go with an opener philosophy, you know, in their place with Danny Duffy. Bad part is the rotations look so good. The last five starts, going six innings at least from these pitchers, and a 1.17 ERA. But, yeah, hope Danny's all right.
Yeah, and Flanny reported that physically he's okay. They didn't mention that. Physically, Danny Duffy's okay, and so maybe some more details will come out in regards to that.
MLB and the MLBPA, the Players Association, agree to use neutral site bubbles. Man, I'm tired of that word. During the
bubbles.
The bubbles, man. I mean, I don't even like blowing bubbles. During the 2020 season, the postseason, yeah, they've talked, even Manfred said, well, we could allow fans in. I'm sure there's other teams around the league say, whoa, wait a minute. We weren't able to take that fan revenue. How would you disperse that, or how are they going to do it? But it looks like Major League Baseball, it's going to be in Arlington for the National League. American League will split, I believe, between Petco and Dodger Stadium for the ALCS and ALDS. World Series would be in Arlington, Texas, at the new ballpark down there for the World Series. This is a smart thing to do. When you get the postseason, you don't want to take any chances. You want to limit travel. And baseball is one of those games where, obviously, home field advantage doesn't really matter in baseball a ton anyway, as we saw during the World Series where the road team won every game. But baseball looks like plans for the bubble.
Yeah, Rob Manfred also said last night that he's hopeful that at least some fans will be allowed to actually attend the games. This was at an event last night. They're working to have limited fan capacity for the League Championship Series and the World Series. And so this is going to be interesting. We know there are, look here in Kansas City at Arrowhead, we had 16,000 plus fans. So it's been done. It's been done at a couple NFL games. It's certainly been done at a couple college football games. Kansas State had a decent amount of fans for their game against Arkansas State. The one thing I question for baseball will be, and I understand why they're doing the bubble. They need to do that. They got to ensure that they can pull off this event. You've put in all this work all regular season to make sure you can get to the big money maker, which is the MLB postseason. You don't want to jeopardize that. So the bubble, I'm good with. And believe me, I want fans at sporting events. If it's safe, I just wonder, do you want to jeopardize the World Series potentially with fans? And I know fans are separate from the players. I get it. But if it works so well all year, you finally get to the World Series and you want to potentially have something that could jeopardize that game because you start allowing 5,000-10,000 fans in. For baseball, it doesn't make as much sense to me because you've gone through this whole thing. It looks like the baseball is going to make it. I don't understand the thought behind that. I know NFL stadiums have it, but baseball is a little bit different because they've gone through this whole thing without fans to begin with.
Yeah, I'm curious because also, who's going to go watch the games? The people just
Rangers like, fans to go watch the.
You're going to count on Dallas Fort Worth Rangers fans to go to these ALCS and ALDS games?
People will go, but I know what you're saying. I mean, you don't want people flying. Like, you don't want fans from LA with the Dodgers flying to Texas. Like, that's another issue you bring into. You don't need that going on, right?
If you wanted that, just play the games in California.
Could do that. You definitely could do that. So that is number two on what's trending. Number three, the Big Ten, maybe tonight, Bank.
Yeah.
Maybe tonight an announcement. That's because on a hot mic, Nebraska's president was caught saying this.
Oh, really? I heard that was happening.
It might be tough to hear that, but it was a hot mic. Essentially, he said, I was talking about some Big Ten football. There's going to be some type of announcement happening tonight. That's from Nebraska's president. We know Nebraska's been very outspoken about this, but that was Ted Carter. Quote, we're getting ready to announce the Huskers in Big Ten football tonight. So We might know if the Big Ten and therefore would the Pac-12 follow after that. We know the Big 12 is moving forward, SEC, ACC. We already had some non-conference games. The 26th is when conference play starts. Could the Big Ten and the Pac-12 announce here very soon that they're going to actually play football, Bink? The question within it is what? When are you playing it? Because if you're going to be the Big Ten and you're going to announce, yeah, we're moving forward again. We screwed this whole thing up from the beginning, but we're not going to play until November, then what's the point?
Well, the Pac-12's already seen a lot of their talent even transfer because they weren't going to play. And we've seen opt-outs from the Big Ten for players saying we're not going to have a season. I think the screws were turned up a little bit with all that rumors about the Pac-12 going to start in late November. Does the Big Ten want to be the only Power 5 conference not playing football? But I'm with you. What are you going to do? Just have the Pac-12 and the Big Ten get together? Because, you know, they're tight at the hip anyway with the Rose Bowl and say, let's have a Rose Bowl champion. But guys like Dabo Swinney at Clemson, who's been in the last five college football playoffs, and Nick Saban at Alabama, like, we're not going to sit around and wait for you to finish your season. So what kind of champion are you going to have? Just a champion between those two conferences? A little late to the eight ball, but I'll be honest with you, they're taking a look at their budgets, and they're looking at how much money, like $50 million from Ohio State's football budget. You're seeing cancellation, gymnastics, and all the other sports that football funds, and they're saying, what do we do? And then they're sitting around and watching all these teams play college football, and all those players are like, hey, they're playing, why can't we? It's an old thing. Well, he's outside, he's playing, he's got the new toy, why can't we have the new toy? But you knew that was going to happen. But these players see high school football going, they see the NFL going, they see all these college football teams going, and they say, where are we going? And the Big Ten has had a ton of pressure put on. I mentioned opt-outs. Sean Wade, one of the best corners in college football at Ohio State, his dad was one of the leaders of that, you know, kind of protesting the Big Ten to play football. And he's already opted out. Yeah. I don't know if he could opt back in. I don't know the rules on that.
I don't either. I mean, I would imagine so if he just made his announcement. Would he want to if the season's not starting, though, till November?
That's I know NFL GMs have said anonymously, not even put their name on it, but they said, I think it kind of matters who's playing or not. Now, I know guys like Jamar Chase, they're still going to be, you know, top 10 picks in the NFL draft who opted out, the Blitnikoff winner from LSU but he's still going. But the fringe players, you take the guy that played, and then we saw Jonathan Adams from Arkansas State really raise his draft profile by Arkansas State playing Kansas State.
The issue the Big Ten got into, their commissioner, Kevin Warren, from the beginning, they weren't transparent about their thought process, how they reached their conclusion. And we wondered when the Big 12 and the SEC and the ACC, that say ACC said they were going to move forward, would we be looking back weeks later and say the Big Ten jumped the gun on it? And now we still don't know for sure if all these conferences are going to make it through their season, but it sure seems like at this point now that we already had non-conference games and even those that have been postponed, which those are going to continue to happen, I would imagine, based off of some tests, that the seasons and conferences are moving forward, and the Big Ten and the Pac-12, it seems to have made a mistake, at least in what is known right now. Now, we could still, let's realize, though, if the Big Ten all of a sudden tonight announces they're going to play, Bink, and let's say it is October even, they're going to start, we could still be sitting here in November and find out that, you know what, they made the right decision initially. Like, nobody ultimately knows what the correct decision was. Right now, it seems like the Big Ten made the wrong decision, and I'm with you. But we could get to November, and the whole thing shut down in November, and we say, well, was it worth the risk to get three games in? Was it worth the risk to get four games of college football?
Or if the conference is great, all right, we'll shut things down for a couple of weeks and let the Pac-12 and the Big Ten
Pac-12 is
catch
the one where I'm
us.
Like, is that, are they actually going to even follow this?
If they're going to allow it, they have to expand the playoffs at that point. If you get to that point, you've got to do it. If you're going to incorporate them any sort, you got to have the non-conference matchups with them. You can't tell me four teams definitively better than the others when they haven't played, if you include the Big Ten in Pac-12. But again, you win a national championship, they say there's no asterisk, but there's a huge asterisk with them. You don't have those two conferences playing in those games. From the odds makers, Kansas City Chiefs actually favored more to repeat as Super Bowl champions. So it's just not us here talking on a mic in Kansas City about the Kansas City Chiefs repeating. It's the people with money in Las Vegas saying the Chiefs, yes, we've seen enough football in week one, the Chiefs are the best team and the best chance to repeat.
Yeah, the odds updated. The Chiefs now listed at plus 550 to win the Super Bowl. So if you go and if you're wondering exactly what that means as far as the implied odds for Kansas City to go out there and win, now it's up to a 15.4% probability of winning the Super Bowl this year. So $100 bet, you'd win about 550 right now on the Chiefs, which is not as much as you would have got a week ago.
Where are you at?
I do not have a future bet on the Chiefs.
But you went
to
out to Vegas.
Right? I haven't been to Vegas since November.
Don't you usually go?
Yeah, I mean, I would have gone during the NCAA tournament if I could have.
Did you drive up to Iowa?
I did not. The boss did.
I can go to Iowa.
Boss went up to Iowa.
Illinois. I mean, Missouri, yeah, but I didn't get, behind the eight ball here.
The Kansas, hopefully, in one day, Missouri as well. Both of them, hopefully, in the next year. So we'll have legalized sports betting. That would be amazing. It would be amazing if we get to that point in time. I think it's only a matter of time, but it seems to be getting delayed and pushed back, and people are using excuses and all that for why it may not be happening. But no, I do not have any Chiefs future bets. I don't usually do future bets. I don't like having the money tied over for 6 months. That's all.
Really?
Yeah, I don't usually do future bets.
Remember when Phil Mickelson used to do that, and he picked the Ravens after to win the Super Bowl?
And they're fun. They're fun. Don't get me wrong. I just don't like having money tied over for 6 months on something like that.
Who would be your biggest dark horse this year?
To win the Super Bowl?
Mm-hmm. Dark horse.
Well, I mean, even if you say just to get to an AFC title game, I have the Steelers getting to the AFC title game, losing to the Chiefs. I don't really have a dark horse because I went with Seattle and the Cowboys in the AFC title game. But if there was anybody, I wouldn't pick it. If you're saying to win the Super Bowl, it wouldn't be another team in the AFC because, again, they got to deal with the Chiefs or the Ravens. It'd have to be an NFC team, a team kind of under the radar. But I don't think this is a year where there's a dark horse team in the Super Bowl. Maybe a dark horse team like the Titans, you know, from a year ago makes a run to an NFC or AFC title game, but actually winning a Super Bowl, yeah, I don't see that whatsoever. And if just watching last night as we go inside the huddle, brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City here for good. The Broncos and Drew Lock, a team that a lot of people felt like heading in and maybe still do. It's just 1 week of football by all means, that they were the second best team in the AFC West. And last night to me just reinforced why this second place, if you will, in the AFC West is so wide open. I don't think there's a clear cut team that is that number two team in the AFC West. I have the Chargers going 9-7 this year and sneaking in as a wild card. The expanded playoffs help that make that happen and a possibility. But overall, while the Broncos in a loss didn't look terrible, there were flashes from Drew Lock. You like what you saw on a couple of plays. I just still question, can they get it done if they're going to have that kind of coaching from Vic Fangio, that kind of decision making? Can you do that, couple it with the injuries against a Titans team who I don't think is all that good? It wasn't a great performance from Tennessee either. It was a kind of crappy football game all the way around, to be real honest with you. But I didn't leave watching last night, both on the Broncos end in the AFC West or the Titans, feeling like either of those teams are playoff teams. I don't have either of them in the playoffs beginning of the season. And last night, there was certainly nothing to make me feel I needed to sway one way or the other. The Titans may have got the win. Good for them. But that football team looked more like the Ryan Tannehill and the Tennessee Titans that were pre that run just to get to 9-7. They didn't look that special whatsoever.
You know, one thing is, too, had Gostkowski made those field goals and made that extra point, had the extra 10 points, you might have looked at this game a little bit different with a little bit of margin there between the Titans. But 9-7, I think that's fair because you got six divisional games. I don't like the division the Titans are in. We'll say they win five of the six. That means come up with four wins outside of. They got one of them last night. So I think the 9-7, 10-6 could be where the Titans end up. I would lean more towards 10-6 with that team than 9-7. Not willing to say tier two, probably tier three right now for the Titans as far as that's concerned, because I think the Buffalo Bills are ahead of them. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers are clearly ahead of them. And I still believe in the Colts being ahead of them. But again, they'll have their chance to play.
I mean, what we thought perhaps was the second best team. At least most people thought the Broncos were that. Overall, it's hard. If you're making me choose who looked the best all weekend, even if it's against a Panthers team who I don't think is any good, it was the Raiders. They looked the best. It's 1 week of football. I get it. It's 1 week. That's what's fun. Overreaction Monday and Tuesday in the NFL. But the Raiders look the best out of everybody else outside of Kansas City.
They've got a lot of young talent. And you look at defense, Max Crosby, Jonathan Abrams back. They didn't have him last year. He's back with the Raiders now. Henry Ruggs banged up, did come back in that game. Like that speed. I like a lot of those skill positions. Can John Gruden coach around Derek Carr to get the most and maximize? We've seen the Raiders make that run before. Can they put it together? But right now, I would say the Raiders, I mean, if you would power rank the AFC West, they're number two. Unless proven otherwise, I think that team's more talented than the Chargers at this point. I think this team, Broncos Raiders probably a better game than we're giving it credit for, but Fangio's got to coach better, and it comes down to coaching. It's one or two decisions a game that can make the difference. Is John Gruden a better coach than Vic Fangio? Of course he is. He's the second-best coach in this division. I see Anthony Lynn. Fangio's Anthony Lynn's a damn good coach, in my opinion. But
you don't have Anthony Lynn as the second best coach, and you think Gruden's ahead of him? See, I think Anthony Lynn's the second best coach in the division.
He built the Raiders up to be a Super Bowl team, won a Super Bowl with the Buccaneers. He's done it before. He made some trades, but that was in the development of the young Raiders going forward. A lot of people thought he was crazy. It could turn out that he was actually looking the right direction to build a team up for Vegas and the new deal. But I would put John Gruden ahead of Anthony Lynn at this point. I mean, it's close, but He has accomplished something. He does work hard.
Yeah, I mean, last night was just not that we needed it, just more confirmation. The Chiefs have nothing to worry about in the AFC West this year.
No.
Nothing.
No,
we already knew it, but if you were still worried last night and what we saw over the weekend from all, even the teams that won, the Chargers and the Raiders, considering who their opponents were, considering how the Chargers had to win, you're not concerned.
But they're upset in Denver, and that's the good news. I mean, when you get these fan bases upset with their football team.
Well, they should be upset. Vic Fangio is terrible.
It's Fangio and Bill O'Brien were getting torn up. I listened to the Broncos postgame last night. I wanted to hear what they had to say.
You stayed up till 1 a.m. listening to Broncos postgame.
I like doing that, though. I like to listen and see what the other team is saying. I did it last year, especially when the Chiefs went up and just whipped the Broncos in Denver. I stayed up. Well, I did the postgame here. Then I went back and listened to the podcast of Denver talking. I mean, it was complete meltdown from what we saw. Here's the former sideline reporter. He's on 92.5 Altitude Sports, Andy Lindahl. This is how he basically, in his opening monologue last night, this is kind of a reflection. He was wearing a Broncos jersey. They put this thing on the radio, and it was on video as well. He said they were in a Broncos jersey. Right? He's a Broncos guy, former Broncos sideline reporter, and he's a radio host and got some credibility with the Broncos, went to their preseason and watched all the practices and everything. This is his thoughts.
I can't believe what I just watched. Vic Fangio was a first-time head coach a year ago. And I guess I expected some of the two-minute jitters in making decisions. But why you're just standing there holding on to timeouts you don't freaking need when you know that the Titans are in field goal range, even though Gostkowski hasn't had a good night, and the guy only needs to make one kick, and you lose another damn football game by another damn point because you got your head up your damn backside not taking timeouts. Well, here we are again. So it's like we never left.
Here we are again. That almost sounds like Browns fans, man. What happens to some of these other teams in the division is almost comical. And I remember Andy was like that last year when the Chiefs went up there and Mahomes gets hurt and they still find a way to win that game. But it's that psychological effect. I mean, you're sitting there and you're thinking, all right, Mahomes, 12 more years. Is this the team? I mean, I like Drew Locke. He's better than what they've had. I like what Drew Locke's potential is. Now, I think he needs somebody to get him to that next level, but I like the potential in where he's going.
He showed flashes last night at times.
Yeah, he did. He overthrew some, but again, I think it comes down to timing and everything. I do think that's the right guy. Fangio is not the right head coach for that team, but you hear him. It's the desperation. Like, hey, you know, here we are again with this team, and he even said he likes Fangio.
Well, Bink, it just makes no sense. Last night, we were talking about the Titans and they're driving, and we know it was a rough night for Gostkowski. Unbelievable, actually. And Denver, with like a minute 17 or so to go after Derrick Henry runs the football, they let the clock just run and run. And Denver has a couple timeouts in their back pocket, and they ended up still with two of them at the end of the game, taking those back to their own locker room. What were you doing? Why were you letting the Tennessee Titans run the clock all the way down? Vic Fangio obviously was asked about that, and here's what he had to say.
Well, it was twofold there. One, their field goal kicker had obviously been having his problems, so I didn't want to extend the drive to where they could get closer, number one. And number two, you know, we would have used the timeout, but we got the running back out of bounds. We would have used the second timeout, but they threw an incompletion, you know, which would have given us one left when we got the ball back.
Yeah, I understand why you didn't use them after that, because, yes, there was an incompletion. Of course you're not using a timeout. I'm talking about before. I'm talking about when there was a minute 17 on the clock and you're letting 30 seconds go off the clock. Because the reason why it mattered, obviously, was you saw Drew Locke, who drove the Broncos down up to their own 43-yard line on the next possession, and they just simply ran out of time. Wouldn't you have liked to have had another 25, 30 seconds? You get another 15 yards, and McManus can attempt a crazy 58, 64-yard field goal in Mile High, where he's made some long, where they've made some really long field goals with the altitude and everything there, and that was just inexcusable. So yeah, fans should be frustrated, and that right there is why. Even if you think Drew Locke is going to be the guy, and we will learn that by the time the season's over, we'll know if Drew Locke is going to be the guy. And you can say, well, they've got all these injuries. No, we won't. I think we will. You'll know 15 more games to go if Drew Locke's going to be the guy in Denver. And I think ultimately he's going to be good enough to be their guy, if not even better than that. I do think there's plenty there to see that there's something for him. But Vic Fangio is the problem. Like, if you're going to say the Broncos are the second best team in the AFC, or could be, some people picked them as a wild card team this year. They could surprise people. One, they got all the injuries now. And if Vic Fangio in year two is still making those mistakes, no, the Broncos are not a playoff threat to even sneak in as a wild card. Not at all. I would, again, that's why if you look at this division, who's going to have the best chance to sneak in? It's the Chargers or the Raiders. Even the Chargers with Tyrod Taylor, to me, I think have a better chance of making the postseason than the Denver Broncos. And I said that before the season started, and last night was just more confirmation of it.
And it was a big game for me. Voloff season to prepare for this team. The Titans clearly showed where they were good, where they were bad. This is a team that went to the AFC title game last year. Plenty of tape on the Tennessee Titans. And the fact is, at the end of the year, when it comes down, like, this game does matter to them when it comes down to head-to-head. Head-to-head often, that's why the Chiefs won the division over the Chargers for years. It comes down to head-to-head. And when you lose a team against a potential fringe playoff team like you think with the Titans and the Broncos, and that's a home game, granted, homes is a little bit different in football without fans there. I get that. But essentially, that was a home game for the Broncos that they had all offseason to prepare for, and one or two mistakes and brain cramps by the head coach. A little bit surprised they didn't have somebody in his headset. A lot of these teams employ, like, analytical guys.
Nobody's saying,
headset.
Hey, Vic, you might want to think about calling a call timeout here, buddy.
Elway grabbed the headset or something and said, what are you doing, dude?
I would have loved the live camera on Elway as that clock was just ticking down.
Did you see Elway graphic on ESPN? It didn't look anything like
at the car dealership where they opened up what looked like a Ford Bronco, and then they had a bunch of the wide receivers, the young talent they brought in. Also, there was the QB coaching, or the quarterback carousel with Trevor Siemian and Paxton Lynch and all these, Joe Flacco and all these different quarterbacks that have run through there. No question. Also, you may have noticed Vic Fangio, even though the NFL sent out that memo earlier in the day, Vic Fangio had no interest in wearing a mask, apparently, during the NFL game. I bring that up because now a company has sent Andy Reid some face shields after that thing fogged up on Thursday night against the Texans. A company based out of New Hampshire saw that take place, and they sent Andy Reid a couple of masks in case he wants to do it. Apparently, these masks are have some like gel on them that makes it so it doesn't fog up. And they sent these same masks to the Falcons and to the Minnesota Vikings. But it won't even fog up your glasses or anything. So,
and they're using them, right? The Falcons are using them.
I want one.
I just want some of the gel put on the glasses, so when I'm wearing the mask, the glasses don't fog up. Yeah.
He's the only coach I've seen wear the shield. I think Zimmer might have had one, too.
The shield, like the actual face shield? I don't know. I think
I want
Andy.
For my sunglasses, because when I go in the store, I want the mask and the sunglasses on. I just want to
look like you're going to rob the place if you do that.
Yeah, and I just want to look like I'm there to get what I need. Don't bother me. Don't come near me. And I want to be able to walk around the store with my sunglasses on.
You could also buy one of these masks from Louis Vuitton. $961. Benny Snell was wearing in his postgame, not the $961 one, I don't think, right? He was wearing a Louis Vuitton mask, Benny Snell Jr. of the Steelers. But yeah, now a luxury coronavirus face shield. Get Andy one of those. Get him one of those.
Yeah, I don't know if Andy's going to be rocking a Louis Vuitton, but you know what,
though? Could you imagine if Andy's got the Louis Vuitton face? Does this one fog up? If it doesn't, it's good to go.
People spend a lot of money on Louis Vuitton, like dog bags and stuff like that. You just knew at some point there was going to be fashion masks to come out. Like diamond encrusted ones.
$1,000, Bank. The 2021 Cruise Collection.
Oh, I like your mask. Shield. Oh, it's Louis Vuitton.
Yeah. Well, if it doesn't fog up, it works better.
Use that scuba wipe, man. You can just throw that in there.
Someone says rub shaving cream on your glasses and rinse. It will stop them from fogging up.
You're
telling Andy just needs to rub some shaving cream on the face shield before the game, rinse it off, and it won't fog up on him? That simple? Really?
It was kind of a foggy night, too. I think that might
withstand
itself in SoFi. It was rainy,
humid, maybe a little bit. I wasn't at the stadium, so I don't know if it was really humid. But you know what I'm saying. When you've got some moisture in the air, and it's – that actually wasn't humid. That was the night where temperatures dropped big time. It was in the 50s. Never mind. I don't know, Bink.
I mean, it was.
Do you think he even goes with the face shield on Sunday out in LA? It's indoors, too, so he could probably go face shield and be totally fine in there.
He's kind of trademarked. I'm surprised there's not logos on it. We can buy those things by now. Like the
Chiefs fans would wear them at the game. If they slapped a Chiefs logo on one of those face shields, you know how many of those they would sell?
A ton. Mom and I ordered some of those New Era with the Chiefs logo on them. Early August, they're not even shipping until October because so many people are buying them. Wouldn't they buy the Andy Reid face shield? You think they would?
They would. Text line says, I don't understand why Andy doesn't just have two or three of those masks. Switch them up once one starts to fog. Just have someone hand him the next one and wipe it. Hand him another one. Wipe it. But yeah, got to make the transition during the game. He's got more important things to worry about. So we'll see. All eyes on the sidelines come Sunday afternoon. Coming up next here on Cody and Gold, some tough royal decisions ahead and the random question of the day.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
Back here on Cody and Gold, Jay Binkley in for Cody Tapp today. Cody back with me tomorrow. Of course, Serto with me as always. You guys can hit us up on the Smitty's Garage Burger and Beer text line, 913-576-7610. And coming up in 30 minutes at 1 o'clock, our weekly conversation with Danny Welniak, KCTV5 sports director. Talk some more Chiefs with her heading into the Chargers game and initial week one reaction. Plus, normally, Bink, Cody gives some parenting advice to Danny. So it's definitely not coming from me.
Does Danny have one kid or two?
Well, none. One on the way.
One on the way. Didn't have another one.
Does
so
not have
three.
Okay. Yeah.
Keep that in mind.
So. Cody's been giving some advice, so you got to have one ready.
Sure.
Have one ready for her coming up at 1 o'clock. The Royals coming up tonight. We'll be back at it after the day off, trying to build on a six-game winning streak. 6-10 first pitch here on 610 Sports Radio. Vern's pregame gets going at 5 o'clock. Pitcher tonight to be determined now. We think it could be Jacob Junis, but we'll see official announcement. It was supposed to be Danny Duffy, and news coming out this afternoon, or in the last hour, I should say. Danny Duffy missed the team charter flight last night, is in Detroit tonight, was due to start tonight. They, for disciplinary reasons, have scratched him from his start tonight. There is a report out there from Fox 4's Rob Collins that Danny Duffy was involved in some sort of his car had damage, I guess. So, you figure an accident of some sort and was waiting for a ride last night and then took another plane to Detroit. That's all is being reported, all we know at this point in time. But certainly, hopefully, everything is all good with him and everything going forward as well. Disappointing, though, because being there in the middle of a six-game winning streak and have this happen, not only are you missing a start, but you have the potential wondering if he was not on a charter flight, was he on a commercial flight? And therefore, we know COVID testing and everything going on. Did you jeopardize the games and health and safety of your own teammates? Not, depending on even if it was completely accident and nothing else happened, but just that act in its own right puts your team in a bad spot.
See if the Royals can keep that mojo going. But you're right. I mean, it's something outside of the normal standard business daily operating procedure for the Royals. Let's go forward to do it. Maybe take a look at Zimmer. I mean, he was working on being an opener in Omaha before. You know what's funny about the Tigers and Royals? They're both 1-9 against the White Sox. And the Tigers are 19-17 against everybody else. And the Royals, right there.
White Sox would be the number one seed, man, in the AL.
Yeah. They've had quite a run. I mean, five straight games with pitchers going at least six innings, 1.17 ERA. So they've got some momentum going forward for them.
Perhaps some tough decisions for the Royals, though, coming this offseason. Josh Vernier, our Royals insider, he was on with Fesco in the morning, and they asked him about this offseason and should the Royals seriously consider some offseason moves.
I think you need to be real honest with yourself about the 2022-23 season, because if we acknowledge that this organization will get back to the postseason on the backs of its rotation, we need to ask ourselves as we approach the offseason, do we believe that this rotation will be ready to compete for a playoff spot next year? I don't know if I feel comfortable saying that, even though Bubich, Keller, Singer, Duffy, that's a pretty strong 1-4, but are they playoff ready? Are they able to put the team on their back and carry them for 162? So, okay, if they're not going to be able to lead you to the postseason next year, let's start building the best possible lineup for 2022 and 2023. I don't know if a 33, 34-year-old Whit Merrifield is the best possible lineup. I don't know if a 31, 32-year-old Hunter Dozier is a part of the best possible lineup. Salvi, I can get with that because the other half of a battery is the catcher teaming up with those young arms, so maybe I can keep Salvi around. Jorge Soler, you would have to sign him to a new deal. So again, it brings me back to the sad conclusion that Soler, Dozier, and Witt can be had this offseason for the right return. If you can give me a bat that can be a part of that 22-23 lineup and years afterward, I'd be willing to part with Dozier, Witt, Soler, and sure, next year might be a slog offensively, but I do think it puts you in the best possible position to run it for 7, 8, 9 years in this division with that great rotation and a comparable offense. I think moves need to be made this offseason.
Those are going to be some extremely tough decisions when you think about what kind of player they are right now, but still thinking when this team is actually able to legit be a contender, And if it's not in 2021, and I don't think it is going to be, if it's going to be 2022 or if it's going to be 2023, well, by that point in time, is it worth hanging on for to be what? To put a decent product on the field for a year next year where you're not competitive, if it means that you might have to take a step back next year offensively, as Vern was saying, but does it set you up better for the next 6+ years going forward? Out of the guys that he mentioned there, Solaire, absolutely they should be looking at. Like Solaire, to me, my only question with him is, are you, because of the shortened season, did that actually help you in terms of, is it feasible to get him locked up on a much cheaper deal and maybe where you thought things were headed for Solaire? And is he someone that you think that will be here and effective in 2023, 2024? And is it a deal that works for you? So Solaire is one where I'm okay if they want to sign him actually long term. The other guys that are mentioned, well, Danny Duffy, one of them. Certainly, we had talked about him well before even today, by the way. Just about this offseason, he might be a sought-after guy because there's not a ton of pitchers available out on the market this offseason. Trevor Bauer is like the number one name, and after that, there's a significant drop-off, Bink. Salvador Perez, that's the toughest one to swallow if you're thinking about trading Salvador Perez, knowing what he's meant to this city. Still, based off the season I saw from him too, Bink, I'm not willing to trade Salvador Perez.
And especially what he does with his pitching staff. I mean, that's the other thing with Salvador Perez. Plus, I think, you know, eventually he could be the first baseman, you know, for this team. I'm serious. I mean, he's got the glove. No, he's good at it. Yeah. Heck, I saw him, you know, screwing around playing shortstop.
I'm more willing to trade Witt than Salvi. And you can say, what are you talking about? But I really am, man. And obviously, yes, I'm not saying to give him for nothing. You've got to get a solid return. But I'm more down to move that direction than to trade away Salvador Perez.
Well, when the contract for Solaire comes up, you talk about a guy, because to get the comp pick between A and that competitive balance round, you need at least a $50 million contract. Yes, Solaire will get a $50 million plus contract. At that point, at Witt's age, probably won't get $50 million. So that would be one that you could move, because that comp pick for you. I know people were upset that Hosmer and Kane weren't traded. But the bottom line is, you have to ask yourself this, and time will tell. But two dynamic arms that you will see and haven't seen yet, Daniel Lynch and Jackson Coar, were the picks that they got for losing because of the $50 million contracts for Hosmer and Kane. They ended up getting Coar and Lynch in that competitive balance round, picks 33 and 34. And you say, all right, would you rather take a prospect? I understand they're prospects too, but I'll take my chances with those two than an unknown prospect that could have come to your team that just wasn't panning out, like a Franchy Cordero or something that wasn't panning out for his particular organization. Witt's not going to get that money on the open market, especially at that age. He's not going to get it. Solaire, I do believe, gets that money. But Solaire is also, you know, I know he's banged up now. He is on the road trip, so he's going to be coming off of it hopefully soon. They won't shut him down for the year. But last year he played 162. Like, he showed you that durability last year, and with the home runs. It's just something you don't see in Kansas City, and I do think he's a fixture. But then as far as Witt and Salvi, and one of the big reasons to bring Salvi back, you got to remember, and I understand, listen, Brady Singer, Brad Keller, Keller's kind of a soft-spoken guy. You know, he's kind of that soft-spoken guy. Who's going to be? Because right now they have the vocal leaders and the lead-by-example guys. Like Alex Gordon, clearly a leader by what he does, how he goes about and conducts his business. Whit Merrifield's a team leader. I mean, do you want all these young guys without that veteran voice to kind of guide them through, show them how to prepare? I think Whit Merrifield's a tremendous value for both how his work ethic is and his kind of vocal leadership he provides in the locker room. How valuable is that to you with the younger talent? You need to keep them around. Again, Danny Duffy's kind of that senior spokesman now inside the rotation.
That's why tough decisions. I mean, that's why these are all going to be tough decisions in a very, very important but also interesting offseason as well, because we know it appears that this organization is potentially with prospects on the verge of being stacked with starting pitchers. And not that all these guys are going to turn out to be starters. Some of them are going to end up being bullpen guys, whether or not they're with the Royals or not. And we know what Brad Keller and Brady Singer just in the last week and each of their starts have been able to do. And what we've seen at times from Chris Bubich, and you like also from a guy like Stammon on the bullpen, some of these young arms. And by the way, on the bullpen end, you're more willing to move on from somebody because that's one of those things that can fluctuate way more year to year. Like Stammon, as good as he was this year, is he going to be that way 3 years from now? You feel you have more faith in a starting pitcher probably pitching at that level than you do a relief pitcher, just based off of how bullpen arms, you can, when it's time for you to be in contention, you can go out and buy the bullpen arm with trades, Right. You can go and do that. You're not going to go buy hitters at the deadline and not
pay
a premium.
But an elite one's going to cost you a high price because the Royals kind of set the market on that.
To a certain extent, Bink, but like it's not the same as if you're looking about trying to find a bet. Let's say it's 3 years from now, the Royals, 2 years from now, whatever, and the Royals are in the mix, trade deadline, they're in the hunt for the AL Central, and we're feeling good about things, and their bullpen maybe isn't very well or very good, but they've versus where they're at right now, where you say the bullpen's pretty strong, pitching strong, but they have no offense, right? You would certainly much rather be going and trying to buy a bullpen arm through the trade market than you would want to be to go try to find a big bat at the trade deadline if there was one. It's hard to find one, and two, the price is going to cost you more. As far as a rental bullpen arm, it's the reason why we saw so many of these rental arms this offseason or during this trade deadline wasn't maybe the market we thought. But Bink, man, like looking forward, I think, and a texter points it out, and I think this is where a lot of Royals fans are at, 913-576-7610. Is like selling now feels like rebooting the rebuild, a failure that's, you know, like you're kind of, are you going to take a step back to go forward again after now we're already how many years into this kind of rebuild? And I think that's the frustration from a lot of Royals fans hearing this. It still doesn't mean it's the wrong decision. Like I don't, is it going to be this offseason? And let's say they were to move on from Witt and they were to move on from, let's put Soler in that category and say both those guys they move on from. It's going to be a tough pill to swallow for Royals fans. But is it going to set you up better for 2022 through 2026? That's the balance that you're going to have to get through. And there's a lot of pressure riding on that decision and those decisions, what they do this offseason, man.
It's going to be tough, but I think this year is one of those years. We'll see the pitching. You know, this 2018 draft class that the Royals had, this elite pitchers, they had to rebuild their minor league system. I mean, they traded five pitchers away for Cueto and Zobrist, and I get it. Not many even panned out. I mean, they've shown Shamania, obviously the best in that group, part of those five pitchers they traded, but they rebuilt their bullpen. And now they've got it up to a top 10 farm system, and you're starting to see some of that farm system play this year with Singer and Bubich, and you got Coar and Lynch and Asa Lacy coming up here. I mean,
Cody had been saying to go ahead and trade one of those guys as soon as possible. I wanted to wait a little bit. At some point they will end up, I think we realize at some point they will end up trading one or two of these young arms once they feel like they're in a position where, all right, we feel good about Asa Lacy or whatever. Like they may move on from one or two of these young arms to go and get that bat. I think it's too early to do that, but maybe that's something and then by this time next year that they would have to do.
It could be Jonathan Bolin, ninth prospect already at the ATS right now. Again, part of that 2018 draft class in the world. But this was the most important thing this year was about defining that rotation. Like hitters, you know, you can come and go, but define the rotation. That is your hallmark going forward. Building your foundation is that starting pitching going forward. And I think the Royals have taken a tremendous leap kind of figuring out who they've got at starting pitchers. And then what I've said, you know, they had three straight wins in a row by guys that were rookies, something they'd only done once before on this stretch in five straight games, 25 years or younger, average age. Going six innings, 1.17. I mean, it's been tremendous. And that's what this year was about. It's seeing the young pitchers come out and develop and really work on your starting rotation to where even like a Jake Junis, you're like maybe in the bullpen or, you know, a move of Danny Duffy. I mean, you look at some of these arms and you think, man, you can see exactly what this rotation could be in 2021.
Some tough decisions ahead this offseason for the Royals.
Random question.
All right, for you, Bink, for Serta, for the text line, 913-576-7610, the random question of the day. A couple of these, I just want to know if you would drink these on a regular basis, or have you had anything similar to this? Let me start. They actually happen to both be from, are they both Pepsi products? I guess that would be the case. So apparently PepsiCo is going to launch a drink to aid sleep, and it's going to be called Driftwell, a new enhanced water drink. And I know there's other drinks similar to this out there, but it will help consumers relax and unwind before bed. An enhanced water drink available nationwide starting in December. Driftwell from PepsiCo. I had taken prior stop. We had this company that was sponsoring the show, and it was basically this stuff that you drink before bed. And it claimed to wind you down a little bit, and it did work. It did work. Now I don't use it anymore. I never really needed it per se. But would I go intentionally and buy this? I guess if someone that has issues falling asleep, maybe so. But what's the taste like? It's just an enhanced water. It's just water. This other stuff was that I'm talking about did not taste like water. It actually had a flavor to it.
It's what bourbon's
for. I mean, look, you're the energy drink guy, Binks. This is the opposite of what you drink.
I spent enough money on stuff to get the energy level up, but whatever happened, just a nice glass of bourbon before you went to bed, a couple shots, Serta's looking at me like, hey, go put that vodka down.
But that'll it's help not you get healthy sleep. For you. It's not healthy sleep if you have to drink alcohol to go to bed.
Well, some doctors will say that a little bit of drinking or an alcohol, like a glass of wine a day or whatever, can actually help you. I can find studies that will show you that alcohol.
For sure.
And I can show you that they're against it, that can hurt you. But
I don't think they're saying having a glass of wine while you're like right as you're going to bed, though.
How about some Jim Beam, you know, straight before you go to bed, you know?
Why would I... If I have problems sleeping, why wouldn't I just take sleep medication of some kind?
Well, they're saying that this might be better for you than actually take. You don't want to get addicted to sleeping pills either. So you don't want to get in that flow. So this is a drink. This is an alternative that they're coming up with. It's enhanced water that's supposed to wind you down a little bit.
Amino acids found in green and black teas and some mushrooms. Just eat some green beans.
I don't think that's how that works, Bink. I don't think that's how that works. I mean, nobody's saying this is going to knock you out. It's not like Ambien, okay? Nobody's saying this drink's going to, you're going to fall asleep in 15
minutes.
People
are going to grab before they go to flight.
It's not going to knock you out. It's going to make you unwind and relax a little bit, it sounds like. So there's that. It sounds like, Bink, you're not going to try this out.
No,
I don't need this, so I'm not going to do that. And then Red Lobster tweeted out today that they are partnering up and releasing a Mountain Dew Gorita. Mountain Dew Margarita.
Like it actually has alcohol in it?
It does. A Mountain Dew Gorita.
I mean, I do like Mountain Dew.
I mean, the photo looks good, but no thanks.
I don't really drink pop.
I haven't had Mountain Dew in a long, long time. Mountain Dew is something where when I was binging my video games as a junior high kid and I was staying up till 3 a.m. playing Halo and Madden, that's when you had Mountain Dew. We just talked about a month or two ago, I found 13-year-old Halo Edition Mountain Dew cans that someone bought off me for like $150. Yeah, that was when I was in junior high.
It's kind of like adding Red Bull to different drinks. You get the Mountain Dew, you get the sugar going into it. Not a margarita fan. I prefer more just, you know, sitting down and drinking the beer.
Of course.
But
of course you do.
I do like Mountain Dew. I was wondering when the beverage would
Can you
get
do both
over.
Of these? What happens if you mix both? You have the margarita in one hand, Bink, and you have this other drink at the same time. What happens?
I don't know.
Will that really knock you out?
I don't know. I would probably drink that more than the water consumed by green beans, black teas, and mushrooms.
Okay. Mountain Dew Gorita.
I'd try it. I mean, like I said, I like Mountain Dew.
Text line as with you, saying the alcohol will just help make you sleep.
Yeah, just try that. I mean, just mix yourself a little bourbon, put on the nightstand. Yeah.
Text line also says just a little physical activity before bed is all you need. That's what the text line says.
How many of these Mountain Dew margaritas are you willing to drink? Because I like margaritas.
They'd be pretty sweet tasting.
But I usually only drink one or two before I'm sick of them.
I don't want a Mountain Dew taste with my...
You ever had a Mountain Dew with a salt ring around it?
I have not.
I'd rather just drink tequila straight.
See, it's a good point there.
Sir. I do like margaritas more on the rocks, though. If I am gonna have a margarita, I'm not a big tequila guy, but if I'm gonna do margaritas occasionally, it would be on the rocks.
Shaken, not stirred.
There you go.
Gold, Alex Gold.
When is the new Bond? We say November. New Bond movie coming out November, right? We figured that out yesterday.
You know, you used that line.
I have. Not, why would I use that line? No.
Gold, Alex Gold, gold standard.
I have not done that whatsoever.
That's why you're still single. Start using it.
Something tells me that's not going to get the job done there, Bink. I don't think so, buddy. I don't think so at all. Let's get to last minute.
Last minute.
Likely the top wide receiver in next year's NFL draft, Ja'Marr Chase, has officially declared for the upcoming NFL draft. He announced that he was opting out of the season in early August, and he makes it official he will enter the draft.
Total, complete stud.
Former,
that LSU
former Kansas
offense with Joe
commit.
And Justin Jefferson, him, Thaddeus Moss, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Louisiana hot sauce. He was a complete and total stud for LSU. And again, we're talking about guys that can opt out or not. It's one of them that can.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just trying to think. Ja'Marr Chase, who knows who will be in the draft. Like, he could end up in Jacksonville. He could end up with the Jets.
Chase for Chase?
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't know, man. Ja'Marr Chase, if he ends up going in the top five, I mean, wide receiver is one of the positions that where you can end up on a crappy team and you can still be fine. Like sometimes you see some of these guys. Yeah, I think Jamar Chase will be fine, but we're going to see more of this. No, nobody's surprised by this. You mentioned the corner out of Ohio State that just opted out yesterday, top corner. We're going to continue to see that, especially depending on what the Big Ten ultimately decides. I guess tonight we're going to learn based on the Nebraska president accidentally opening
Justin
his mouth.
Fields is probably watching intently.
Are we going to see a quarterback opt out yet? Have we had a single quarterback?
Nope.
Quarterback opt out? I don't believe so.
None at
wide
least
receivers, few linemen. Yeah, none for the big boys. I don't think we'll see it. You think we'll see a Big Ten quarterback? If the Big Ten says we're playing November 1st, you think a Big Ten starting quarterback is going to opt out?
No, I don't see NFL ready there. I mean, Justin Fields would be the one, but he wants to play.
He probably needs to.
Blue Valley North part of Graham Mertz up there in Wisconsin. He's not opting out.
He sent a tweet the other day. He was watching college football, bummed out. I can't even imagine those guys that are trying to play, seeing the other conferences play football over the weekend, and they're sitting at home.
The Chiefs are going to be an interesting situation. I thought they might go wide receiver this year, but this draft
is loaded with wide receivers. Is Bink already prepping his, what did you do, 8.0 this past year?
Seven or eight of them. I think eight of them. I don't know. I created quite a bit of them. I was trying one a week, and one week I did like two.
Text line says, by the way, Bink, when you fill in, the show should be called Old and Gold.
That's probably accurate.
Now we should work just fine. All right, coming up next, we head into the 1 o'clock hour, our weekly conversation with Danny Welniak. Bink's got some parenting advice, which is going to be must listen. No doubt about that. Next.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.